I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to Payment Security in the Pandemic Age, a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by GM SecTech. With operations in 50 countries worldwide and headquartered in San Juan, Puerto Rico, GM SecTech has over 50 years of service in the technology and security verticals. To learn more about GM SecTech, visit gmsectech.com. Joining me today is Hector Guillermo Martinez, president of GM SecTech. Welcome, Hector. So happy to have you with us today.
Good morning, Hillary. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So, Hector, to start off, for any of our listeners who may not have caught your interview with our editor-in-chief, Steve Morgan, what is GM SecTech's background in the payment security industry?
Right. So we've been in the payments industry north of 50 years. We started the company in early 1970 as a payments processor. So we processed transactions in the Caribbean, Latin America, Southern Florida for Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, and JCB, as well as some private label cards. And through different acquisitions and different iterations, we slowly transitioned into security. Obviously, security, information security, such a large space. We wanted to make sure that we could have meaningful impact. So one of the areas that for us came natural is just doubling down in that payment security space, which at the time, and if you think about 20 years ago, payment security was at the forefront of what a threat actor was looking to grab, right? Was looking to do theft, steal, right. All these different types of nuances, because obviously payment card data was relatively straightforward to steal, right? You know, you have a card number, you can commit fraud. So we transitioned, very early into payment security around 20 years ago, and we became a PCI QSA company supporting the data security standard and all entities that either store, protect, or or transition credit card information. So again, it's storing card information, it's transmitting card information, and it is transacting card information. So everything that's within those three spaces is what we do today to protect cardholder data.
Okay, great. And the payment card industry data security standards, or many will know this as PCI DSS, were established by the, there's so many acronyms, so buckle up everyone. So we're established by the PCI SSC, which is the Security Standards Council for payment card industry in 2006. And that was an answer to the persistent cyber threats, fraud, and theft that the industry and the general card holding public were experiencing, much to what you were just referencing. And so for anyone who doesn't know, who's listening, the PCI DSS provides security guidance for service providers that store, process, transmit cardholder data. So you spoke of the involvement that GM SecTech has, but how do you advise clients on compliance with PCI DSS, since you are the largest in the world for payment card industry qualified security assessor, or as you just said, PCI QSA?
Right, Hillary, and to your point, you're right. It is an alphabet soup. There's many nuances. There's many different types of codes and as far as the standard is concerned, because it is complicated. And part of it is because the standard came about to create a common language between the different card brands. Before 2006, each card brand had its own compliance program. And because it had its own compliance program, it became very complicated to do chargebacks and to just process all these types of challenges that would exist when there would be fraud. So the card brands came together, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, and JCB, and created this standard that touches everything that has to do with payment card data, right? So anything that any organization that transmits, stores, or transacts card information is susceptible to be in compliance with the standard. For us, as I was mentioning earlier, it was a natural transition because we came from the payment space. And doubling down in security, payment security, for us, was just a natural space. Today, we are one of the largest QSA companies worldwide. We have over 45 certified consultants by the PCI Council. We are licensed to perform audits on a worldwide basis. We have over 8 different types of certifications, from qualified security assessor to approved scanning vendor, card production security assessor, payment application, 3D secure, forensic investigation. among other ones, PIN security. And that for us is very, very important. It's an important part of our business. But we've also become payment experts in that we assist and we mentor our clients to become PCI compliant, right? Part of the challenge is many organizations see PCI compliance as an event. We always mention that it is a continuing process, right? It's not taking a photograph of, you know, your compliance, you're in compliance tomorrow, and then, you know, you're no longer in compliance. It's a continuing process. So part of our mission is helping our clients to be continuously in compliance and always elevating their bar to ensure they're one step ahead of a threat actor.
And so what are the risks for companies who are not PCI DSS compliant? And then what risks potentially extend or trickle down to their customers, their consumers?
Right. It's a great question. And the challenge is that payment card data, right, it's so elusive, right? You know, there's so many transactions happening all the time that organizations that process, transmit, or store credit card information need to be very vigilant of where is that data going through, where is that data being stored. So there are a lot of companies that do not, you know, become compliant or they forget to become compliant. And that's when we start getting into trouble, because the hygiene of maintaining a PCI DSS compliance program is not necessarily up to snuff. And that's where a threat actor is lurking in the shadows to possibly exfiltrate that information, right? Take that information away from that organization. Part of the challenge is, you know, compliance costs are elevated, right? You know, you need to make sure that you have a continuous investment program that is covering every single area in your organization that touches credit card information. So the biggest challenge is falling in non-compliance, and that's where we see breaches occur, right? So we typically see, for example, the Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report and the Verizon Payment Security Report, which touches on companies that at one point were in compliance, but then they let it go and they were breached. So that tends to happen a lot. So the biggest single piece of advice I tell our clients, our friends, our prospects is to ensure that PCI is their baseline. PCI is like the first step. It's not nirvana. It's basically the first step. It's that baseline. And that's where we should always be at a level one and always raising that bar.
And so what are the risks and threats that continue to exist even if a company is PCI DSS compliant?
Right. I think, and you know, we've seen this year, Hillary, with the advent of the pandemic. There are, you know, we've been transitioning to more e-commerce. You know, there was a study that came out earlier this year from Visa saying that in Latin America and the Caribbean, for the first time, 3 out of 10 cardholders used e-commerce or contactless transactions for the first time.
Okay.
So that's great because it's transitioning into a new space, right? It's transitioning in, you know, new consumers and going on Amazon and going on all these e-commerce sites and obviously making their life a little easier.
Right.
But what happens is the fraudster is very vigilant of these changes, and they're always looking at that low-hanging fruit. So obviously these new shoppers, right, these new cardholders that are shopping in e-commerce, they might not be as vigilant of their ecosystem when they're going, you know, to shop online. So for example, they're going to a brand new shop. Maybe that shop is not secure. So we're starting to see new threat vectors arise from this avalanche of new shoppers, right? New e-commerce shoppers coming about. And that's creating new threats and new risks. And we've seen obviously fraud go up with the advent of the pandemic. And it's natural. It's understandable because we're shopping much more remotely today. And there's a lot of new shops that were never, you know, they were brick and mortar before. They were never into this space of e-commerce. And those shops perhaps are not taking into account PCI DSS compliance as an example, because they're running to ensure that they can meet the demands of their customers. Security is never at the forefront, right? Security is always reactive. It's never proactive.
Yeah.
And that always happens. And at the end of the day, I always tell people that, you know, security is a necessary evil. You know, you'll never put a fence around your house because you like the color of the fence. Something happened to get you to put that fence in your house, right? Risks, vulnerabilities, and threats. But, you know, maybe I'll have the picket fence because I like the color. Not really. The reality is it's something that happened to me, and information security, payment security is the same.
So Hector, that's a really nice segue into the next question, which surrounds how the payment security landscape has changed over the past decade or so with innovations in payment processing. So what are you seeing? I mean, things that I've been seeing personally, especially with the pandemic, like you said, are virtual wallets, mobile payment services, et cetera.
Right. So these are all great nuances and innovation that's happening across the board. I was just recently in Mexico, and one of the areas that's really hot is, for example, they call it the payment link. So, for example, instead of bringing a point of sale to your table, you generate basically like an email with a payment link that helps you become much more efficient in shopping, and that obviously helps you to become to do an e-commerce transaction in a secure way, because that payment link is in an iframe and it's secure and it complies with PCI. So we have seen, you know, quite a few different types of countries adopt newer ways to pay. Many of them, like, you know, you were saying, you know, mobile payment wallets, the new payment gateways, they do have embedded security. But by and large, what we're seeing is that there are just too many merchants out there that are running to become e-commerce ready, and security is not being built in. So that's kind of the challenge that we're seeing. We are seeing, again, innovation, but it's not as fast as this you know, acceleration to have merchants out there, you know, coffee shops and, you know, small brick and mortar stores that want to be able to sell what they call e-commerce in IRL, e-commerce in real life, right? For example, you know, you're going to go to the deli and you can, you know, shop and you know, you can do that purchase on your phone. When you go to the deli, you just pick up your goods instead of waiting in line. And so that whole e-commerce in real life is happening very quickly, but it's creating more challenges and more stress into the system because, again, security is not embedded from the get-go. So part of our message, part of our mantra is to always embed security from the get-go. It's always going to be much more cost-effective when you build in security versus bolted it on later, because it becomes more expensive, right? You know, it's not designed from the get-go. So that's what we're seeing. You know, there is innovation, but at the same time, there is just this avalanche of new merchants that are bringing to bear, again, new solutions. Challenges, you know, are they ready to be secure and in compliance with the PCI DSS?
And so since there are some vulnerabilities there, what are some of the ways that bad actors may be able to compromise, you know, continue to compromise our payment data?
Right. I think, you know, the low-hanging fruit is still credit card information, right? So when we look at, you know, we do threat intelligence for our customers, and, you know, we do navigate the deep and dark web, and we see different types of categories are being sold in the deep and dark web. Card data, by and large, is still the most popular, whether it's credit or it's debit. The costs are relatively, you know, straightforward. You're talking about $4 or $8 per card. Of course, it's a race for the fraudster, because he doesn't know for sure that when he buys that credit card, when he buys it from the dark shop, it will be useful, right? Yeah. It'll be active. So it's kind of like a catch-22 for them, but it's highly lucrative. And they buy these obviously in batches. So we are seeing that credit card information is still, you know, very, very popular. A lot of it comes from card not present transaction. Again, coming from e-commerce transactions where a shop might have been exposed. And obviously when it's exposed, the threat actor can take that information out of that virtual point of sale and then resell it in the dark web. So it's still happening quite effectively. And as I was saying earlier, all these shops that are going online, because they're not necessarily always building security from the get-go, it's creating, again, that stress where it's relatively easy to do it like a pickpocket of that point of sale, take that information and sell it in the dark web. So we are seeing a lot of that. We're still seeing those challenges because, again, it is attractive to sell and buy card information in the deep and dark web. At the same time, you know, we are seeing, for example, different variants of malware that is designed to attack point of sale systems. And we did an investigation recently where a large, basically a food court, which had 7 point of sale systems, were infected through their Wi-Fi with a variant of Zeus, which had basically, it was a polymorphic type malware that kind of change its signature so the antivirus would not capture it. Mm. And what it was doing is that every night it was shooting card information to the Ukraine. So again, we're seeing sophistication come into bear, come into play into all these types of merchants. The reality is a small merchant that sells food will never have the sophistication to be able to understand, oh, I have a advanced type of malware in my system. This is where, you know, it becomes complicated and where payment processors, as well as the card brands, have alerts and have different types of threat intel saying, you need to be aware of this because small merchants, by and large, are the most susceptible to a breach today. And it makes sense, right? If we think about Home Depot, we think about Target, those companies, you know, 5, 7, 9 years ago were breached and they've learned from those processes. They have big budgets. So the threat actor knows that a small merchant might not have that budget. So they go after that and that's the low hanging fruit.
Mm, that makes sense. And Hector, do you think that the adoption of cryptocurrency by the general population will change payment security? Like, for example, with Facebook's Libra and their digital wallet system, Novi, that will potentially, essentially, democratize cryptocurrency for those without blockchain-compatible systems?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not too sure, Hillary, if it'll change payment security. But what I would say is, you know, I think blockchain is here to stay. I mean, we've seen this incredible ascent of Bitcoin, as an example, in the past, you know, 2 weeks, because it's, you know, it's an instrument, right? It's an instrument of trade, and it's relatively clean in the sense that you, with the ledger, with the blockchain ledger, you can understand where it's been from the creation to its last moment in time, its last movement. So there is that visibility, there's that auditability, and I think that's here to stay. I've seen, for example, card brands like Visa starting to issue cards that might be backed by Bitcoin or by cryptocurrency. So that, I think, is helping to democratize this and become more mainstream. What I believe is that, you know, the cryptocurrency, like everything, is being used by threat actors, right? So if you look at the deep into the dark web, that is the single most effective currency used today to be able to transact with a threat actor, with a fraudster, right? That's what they use to buy these cards, right? They use cryptocurrency. So like with everything, right? Typically things are developed for the good, but in the end, they end up being using for bad,
right?
Because it is, again, immutable. There's that incognito effect. So I think it's here to stay. It's just a matter of, you know, how will it evolve, given that in the dark web, in the criminal underground, cryptocurrency is kind of the lingua franca, right? It's what's being used to transact versus other forms that might be easier to trace.
And so, Hector, as we wrap up this first episode together, are there any best practices or advice you'd recommend to our listeners to ensure that their data remains secure?
Right. So I think, you know, thinking about security as a continuous process is probably one of the single most important elements of advice that I can mention. You know, security, again, is not always sexy. Security is always, again, that necessary evil. It's reactive, not proactive. But thinking about security as a continuous process is a good way to think about security and embedding that from the get-go, right? PCI DSS, if you're in the payment space, is just a natural standard to follow. It's always changing. We like to joke around the fact that, you know, PCI has been around for a long time. And if we look at other standards, ISO 27K1, NIST, GDPR, I mean, there's so many standards out there. There's many different types of data protection rules out there. But PCI is probably the granddaddy of them all. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that's always changing. So I like that. We at the company like that because it's adapting to how the threat actors are adapting. The threat actors, you know, are smart. They know what the standard is. So they try to elude whatever's there to ensure they're one step ahead. And the fact that the PCI standard is always changing, now we're in 3.2.1, moving to 4.0, is a good way to stay at least as close to what the threat actors are doing with their tactics, techniques, and procedures to ensure that we're, again, one step ahead, that we're protected. So PCI DSS would be kind of my call to action. Ensure that, you know, if you touch credit card information, if you touch payment card information, PCI DSS, even if your processor tells you that you don't have to be full, in full compliance, It's a best practice. It's a good practice to be PCI DSS as a baseline, and then adding other layers of security to ensure that if you are transacting, if you're a merchant, that you're protected and you're giving your cardholders, your shoppers, a bona fide way to ensure that trust is kept from the initiation of the transaction to the moment you get your goods.
Fantastic. Well, Hector, thank you so much for joining me today. This was such a great conversation.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Of course. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Payment Security in the Pandemic Age is brought to you by GM SecTech. GM SecTech offers innovative solutions and services in cybersecurity, governance, and compliance focused on managing digital risk. Their solutions are designed to detect advanced attacks and respond to them effectively, reducing business risk, fraud, and cybercrime. To learn more about our sponsor, GM SecTech, visit gmsectech.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.